You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On a Wednesday. We're joined by Grant Newsham. I don't actually know where Grant is right now in the planet. He always seems to be moving about. Part of the Witness Protection Program, I'm assuming. So, Grant, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. We're fine, thank you.
So where are you? Where does the Witness Protection Program have you these days?
It's more something of a short attention span. So I'm in Hawaii right now.
Oh, there you go. There you go. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. I know it's late there. We have a whole bunch of stuff to ask you. So let me ask you in the order they come into my head about North Korea. They had their founders celebration over on September 9th. There was news that they were readying an ICBM launch, yet I did not see one. Do you make anything of that?
No, I think they just either weren't ready or they thought they would wait a little while. You know, they know that they've got the world, and particularly those parts of the world they don't like, sort of hanging on everything they do, almost everything they say. And, you know, they just give it some time, and it'll come. But for whatever reason, they just didn't feel like it.
Okay. All right. Well, my hopes are dashed. My hopes are dashed then. All right, next. Steve Bannon, in an extensive interview with 60 Minutes, quoted as saying that the key to North Korea is China. North Korea is a client state, and unless we're willing to go places with China that we've never been, we have no other course of action other than a burn it down military course of action that won't be in the best interest of the nation. What say you to that?
Well, I think he's basically correct that unless China cooperates or leans on North Korea really hard, it's very hard for us to have any to get what we want out of North Korea. It seems that, I don't know, just because Steve Bannon says it, it seems that it, I don't know how you'd put it, it seems to have a flavor to it that just makes it seem alarmist somehow. But it just, you know how very often when, depending on who says something, and they can say the exact same thing, the general reaction to it is very different. But the fact that even though he said it, he's basically correct. I think at the end of the day, without China's cooperation and pressure on North Korea, which they've shown no willingness to do,
right,
that it's very hard to really have any success.
Okay, so Steve Bannon, he states the obvious, and so we live with that. And so that brings us to the other great news of last week. What is the significance of the United Nations sanctions? And I'm going to give you let me do it in two parts. One, is it more the sanctions themselves, or is it simply the world pushes, in a united fashion against North Korea? Which is more important? Because we went down this road in Iraq. The UN inspectors and yada, 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 and we sanctioned, and then we went through another round of sanctions, and the UN inspectors still weren't granted access, and then they were granted access, and then they weren't. What is the significance of sanctions?
I think the significance of this is that the United States has taken a necessary step to say that it has done a certain thing, that it's gone to the United Nations and reached a sanctions agreement, made the necessary compromises, so that the U.S. can now say it did that. And then once these prove not to be successful, as will be the case, I think, then the U.S. can say, look, we tried. And then you will see the U.S. taking unilateral sanctions, I think very harsh ones, and increasingly harsh, against China, against Chinese interests, and also more unilateral sanctions against North Korea. But it's really this next step after this that I think will be increasingly strict or troublesome sanctions against the People's Republic of China. So I don't, you know, it is, of course, interesting that a few more countries have sort of signed on. You've had Mexico, I think, not cut ties, do something towards North Korea, even before the sanctions were passed. And if here and there on the margins, there's a few more countries that have sort of gotten come around to the idea of at least publicly being against North Korea. So I think that's maybe of some use, but I think ultimately, until you get to China, everything else is nibbling at the edges. But it, as I say, I see the big significance is that it's the United States has now done, it's almost checked a box. So once it's done with this, then it can go on to the next, try the next thing.
All right. Compare and contrast this with the road that we went down with Iraq. It seems to be very similar in that it's almost like we have to play charades to get to a point of confrontation. Is that what we're doing again?
I think, but the circumstances are somewhat different in that at the end of the day, Saddam, I think we kind of knew we could steamroll Saddam Hussein in a fairly short while. But once again, just the circumstances are different. Mm-hmm. But I think it is but at the same time, it is similar. Where the Bush administration had to do certain things to get to the point where it, I think it kind of knew that it was going to war. But with North Korea, I think there's still a hope, more than there was in the case of Iraq, that somehow putting these sanctions on China might actually get us, allow us to avoid war. So it's a little different in that regard, but I think it very much is a calculated move on the U.S.'s side to almost give itself more freedom of action by going to the U.N. First. Though in the Bush administration's case, I think there was a genuine hope that more countries would support what the U.S. was trying to do towards Iraq, and that the going to the U.N. I think it wasn't a cynical move or simply only something they felt they had to do, but they were hoping for some more help. Maybe there's a similar hope on the Trump side that by doing this they'll get some more cooperation around the world, and sometimes even cooperation on the margins can be helpful.
Grant Newsham, my globetrotting guest here. You can find Grant's work in AsiaTimes.com if you simply do a search on his name. Grant Newsham, N-E-W-S-H-A-M. You'll find his work. It comes up very quickly. And a retired colonel in the United States Marine Corps and does kind of security consulting and knows a lot about organized crime in the Far East as well. So I say that to ask to read this email. Mac, I've heard Grant speak about organized crime in the Pacific. What is the single major player, the largest, if you will, in the Pacific relative to organized crime?
I would say, Chinese organized crime. What you hear is actually referred to as the triads, but these are those, you know, you've probably seen the Hong Kong movies where these guys who look like, you know, sinister Chinese gangsters. I think they're probably the big one. And what you find with the triads, you know, who you hear about drug dealing and running rackets and the clubs in Mong Kok and right. In Kowloon and Hong Kong. Yeah, they do all of that stuff that regular gangsters do. But the best way to view them is actually as an extension of the Chinese government and the Chinese security services. So the triads are effectively just street toughs, is one way to look at it. But they, so that they play this larger role, really, as an arm of Chinese intelligence and the Chinese government. So you, for example, you look into something like counterfeiting, and you'll always find it tracks back into the PRC. It could be just something like a, say, a PLA-associated government or factory or some other government entity connected to some other government entity. But they also facilitate the ability to really to move contraband, to move almost anything around the region, and that includes from North Korea via South Korea, via China, via Taiwan, and really almost anywhere. Additionally, you've seen in the Hong Kong independence protests that the protesters have been set upon by thugs, by the triads. And this is a pretty brazenly obvious example of the Chinese security services using organized crime as muscle. It'd be like, say, a U.S. political party using the mafia to beat up other and kill, if necessary, other members of other political parties, so I would give them a lot of credit, probably as a big thing to watch for, and you will find, of course, there's Japanese organized crime, which in Japan is a huge deal, and it too in some cases tracks back to the government. And that's one of a little bit of a peculiarity about Asia is just how organized crime groups do have government connections. Basically they provide services for the government, and the government provides them protection and support and money, and sometimes is even just in joint ventures with them. That's how I would see it. But you find odds and ends all over the region. You've even got Russians and Israelis there, and then the Southeast Asian gangs. Are very interesting in their own right, also.
Okay, that is a nice segue into this question. In watching different people be interviewed about the UN sanctions, one of the things that was mentioned was we can attempt to cut certain things off, but for instance, the Russian black market or the Chinese black market will certainly step in to provide where other things have been cut off. Your thoughts on that?
That's true. You know, sanctions are never airtight. There's any number of examples, but there's always ways that leaks. A couple good examples that haven't been looked at much, not in Asia, but the old sanctions against South Africa back in the apartheid era and against Rhodesia. And in both cases, or we'll just take Rhodesia, there was almost a complete ban on any sort of trade with Rhodesia. Certainly oil was supposed to be cut off.
Right.
Tobacco exports were completely banned. Even Rhodesians were not allowed, Rhodesian airline was not allowed to fly anywhere. And Rhodesian passports not recognized, but there were always leakages, and South Africa played a big role in helping them, and particularly the oil blockade were all sorts of ingenious ways to get around it. And so South Africa faced similar sanctions, and one in particular that's worth noting as it relates to North Korea is that there was an oil ban on South Africa, but they actually were able to make use of their huge coal deposits, and they were the world leaders in coal gasification, basically turning coal into oil.
Right.
This isn't to say it wasn't a huge inconvenience, but there's ways around it. But at the same time, it can really hurt a country to have to live with these things. Obviously, the more civilized the country and the more advanced it is, the more irksome the difficulties caused by sanctions are. So the way, say, a South African or Rhodesian would be affected would probably have a bigger effect than it would, say, on a North Korean. But within North Korea, you have the elite which benefits from luxury good imports,
mm-hmm.
Say run up from Singapore to Shenyang and then overland or on a short flight to Pyongyang. So the point of that is, these guys live very well and they're used to getting, say the luxury goods and living well. And that's where sanctions have their most effect is when they go after the ruling elite and the people associated with it. But the emailer is correct. There's always leakage. But the tendency is to say, well, because there's leakage, we shouldn't have sanctions.
Right.
I think that's that's going too far, but rather it means just make the sanctions better and really crack down on them. And once the guys who benefit most start to suffer, then they have the effect. And I think that is doable with North Korea. Plus, hammer South Korea and China, and it gets even better.
So what that implies is that on the road to whatever outcome happens with North Korea, we would see multiple rounds of sanctions like we saw with Iraq, and the tightening and the modification, and that when we apply sanctions, we expect that they will have a marginal impact because of the things you just discussed. Does that make sense?
It depends on how you enforce them.
So let me ask you: who enforces this? This is all self-regulating, right? There's no UN enforcement mechanism that is out there monitoring anything, is there?
Well, there's no effective mechanism, and that gets to the heart of it all. That as long as the United States tries to go through the UN to enact sanctions, and enforcing it is like 100 times harder than even enacting it if you're using the United Nations. As long as they do that, you're going to get these watered down, lowest common denominator sanction resolutions that really, I think one doesn't have to even be cynical to suggest these are not going to work very well through the United Nations. You'll notice that this is just the latest round. At every one of these, it's always announced, even by the administrations, well, these are the toughest sanctions yet. And they said that every single time. And they may be the toughest sanctions yet, but they're about 1/100th of what they need to be. So you could have say another 95 rounds of sanctions against North Korea, and if done via the United Nations, I don't think these will be very effective at all. So that is, I think, a fundamental point, that go through the United Nations, and if you're expecting sanctions to work against, they're not going to. It's once a powerful country that has the economic clout and the political clout throws its weight around, then the sanctions have a chance. But do it through the United Nations, and this isn't going to work very well. But if you go back and look at every sanction that's been enacted against North Korea and what the public announcements have always been by the U.S. and by the United Nations, you wonder why Mr. Kim just doesn't, I think, die of laughter or his father as well.
Well, I chuckle, and I got this feeling as I watched the interview with Steve Bannon. When you know what's going on behind the scenes, and then you see what gets written about, it's almost laughable. Like, look at this. This is what's passing for news, and it's nowhere close to the truth. I remember having experiences like that in Iraq. This Brit reporter with a crooked nose, I wish I could remember his name, but I don't. He went on CNN one night. It was like, under the nose of coalition forces south of Baghdad University, 150 people were kidnapped. And you're watching it, you're going, what happened? Like, I didn't hear about that. Well, it's a Chamber of Commerce disagreement between two sheikhs, right? And so because the glass factory got open and it's beginning to make more money, and he added a second shift, the sheikh who owns it, the sheikh who owns the road that they all travel down, he wants more money. And when he approached him at the Chamber of Commerce meeting and he said, I need more money from you, and he got told, I'm sorry, that's not happening. He said, okay. And then he kidnapped the swing shift. And so, when you know what's going on and somebody says, oh, that's that dispute between those two sheikhs, But on the national news that night, that's not what the American public heard. You know, it was the inept American forces in this, and right underneath their nose, this thing happened. And you just look and you're like, oh. And I think Kim must have similar experiences, like, oh my God, if they only knew, right, the truth.
You'd think so. And this is, if, you know, having looked at this for a while, and you just almost in awe of just how ineffective the things that have been done against North Korea have been. When there, as we've discussed on the program before, just it's not hard to uncover these North Korean networks, economic business networks, trade networks. It just takes a little effort, and it's, you know, apparently the effort required is too great. So it is, you know, I don't think he's worried yet. But once again, there's not a whole lot of depth to the North Korean regime's economy, to its economic position. So even if you can hit it a fair amount, you know, just hit it some in an effective way, it's going to have an outsized effect, say, compared to sanctions against a much bigger country. Say sanctions against Russia have a certain effect, but say sanctions against North Korea done right, have a much bigger effect, but these things really have to be done with a degree of ruthlessness and really unflagging persistence. And we've not shown any willingness to do this. We have the ability. We've really just not shown the willingness to do it, and that involves successive administrations.
Grant Newsham, my guest. I have to take a break, and then when we come back, this kind of naturally spins into this discussion about the Prime Minister of Japan's comments about prior to any type of talks, the peninsula would have to be denuclearized. So I want to talk to you about Japan when we come back. Grant Newsham, my guest here on a Wednesday, graciously staying up in Hawaii in order to join us, and we always appreciate that. More of All Marine Radio coming up here on a Wednesday, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsouthfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Here on a Wednesday, Grant Newsham, my guest. We're talking North Korea, sanctions, organized crime, and now something we've never done before, Grant. This is the tourist guide portion of the program. Hey, Mac, I want to go to Hawaii because my wife wants to. In fact, I don't really want to go, but she wants to go, so I'm going. My question to Grant, since you have him on, is what's the best time of year to come to Hawaii? I know in California they used to joke, have your family come in June because it sucks, and your friends come in September because it's beautiful. What's the best time of year to tour Hawaii? So,
that's an easy question. That's like asking what's the best time of year to go to Singapore. It's always kind of the same, but I would suggest October, November, December, January, February, March, April.
Are the better months?
So about any time in that period's okay, and then partly it's a little less. It's never hot here, but sometimes it's hotter than others. But it's never all that hot then, and it's not really the tourists aren't. There's not so many. Not that that's a huge problem. But it's just, if you ask me, that's what I would say. But it's not like going to Philadelphia and having a choice between August or January.
Right.
If you come any time really, it's going to be okay. But I would avoid August and September just because it always seems so hot to me.
Okay. All right. Are you a hot weather? Your favorite type of weather is?
A lot of snow. That's always pretty good. I'm not making this up.
I know. I know you're being candid. A lot of snow. Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah, who would have thought? Go live in Hokkaido for 3 months sometime. That's just to get my fill out.
Is it what? How snowy is it there? Is it upper Midwest snowy?
Yeah, it would be, buffalo snowy.
Oh, buffalo. That's.
Or say northern Minnesota snow.
That's buffalo snow is biblical snow.
That's how I look at it.
All right. The prominent in the early bird this morning, I want to say the number four story that comes out of the Nikkei Asian Review is, I'll read you the headline.
We're here at the Face of Battle exposition at the National Portrait Gallery with...
Oh, my God. no dialogue with North Korea without denuclearization, Abe says. Japan Prime Minister seeks to mend ties with China through reciprocal visits. Talk to us about what Mr. Abe is trying to do. What is going on with these comments? What is going on with the trips to China? Because that is not an easy relationship for them either.
Read the headline again. Sounds breaking up.
This is the gallery of Stacy Pearsall. Stacy Pearsall is an Air Force photographer, an Air Force veteran, and Bronze Star.
1 second.
She and Lisa
I have a.
17 years old.
This thing starts every time I start the early bird.
One of the few female photographers of the Air Force.
This video starts. So let me read you. I'll read you the headline again.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
No, the headline is "No dialogue with North Korea without denuclearization." Abe says, and then the subheadline is "Japanese Prime Minister seeks to mend ties with China through reciprocal visits."
Okay, got it. It's an odd
statement because to me, simply getting them to a table will not be easy. And if the precondition is that you're denuclearized before we have a dialogue with you, then my sense is you just made it more difficult.
I think so. But they're also the guys hanging on the elbows of this big, strong guy who's going to do most of the fighting.
So he's the little dog yapping in the background?
But that's no a little dog, but he's a little bigger than a Chihuahua, but
okay. Uh-huh.
Because it is Japan. But he says this, and it's he actually sounds more uncompromising, say, than Secretary of Defense Mattis.
Right.
It's understandable that he would say this, because he is trying to be as supportive of the United States as possible, and. You know, so I would take this, take it at almost, I don't know, quite face value, but certainly he deserves credit for not giving you this Hamlet sort of statement that most public leaders will give. So it is it sounds uncompromising, but that's a negotiating position, and also it is intended for a U.S. audience as well, or particularly a U.S. government audience. Show that Japan is backing us. As for seeking to mend ties with China, that's pretty much an ongoing thing. It's true, it just rarely gets mentioned. There's always been efforts by the Japanese government to talk to China, to have dealings, hopefully in some way it might improve things. I don't know how much confidence there really is. I don't think there's very... much, except among the China faction within the Japanese government and within the Japanese political world. So you will, for example, you've had a groups of Japanese businessmen go to China to have talks and discussions, but really just to get Chinese hospitality and enjoy that for a few days. But there's always these sorts of government to government, and also at some level, but also private sector to Chinese government engagements going on. So they would like to mend ties with the PRC. It doesn't mean they expect it to happen too soon. So they are contradictory statements, but and But once again, Japan, I don't want to use the role bit player, but because they are an important part of the equation. One should always be clear about that. But at the same time, Mr. Abe saying that is one thing. If the president of China said it, would be another, or the president of South Korea, if he said it, then it would, I think, be a little more attention worthy, to my way of thinking.
Interesting. I have an email for you. So stand by as I get my act together here. What role will the UN ultimately take in this conflict with North Korea? Will it be the same role that they had in the conflict with Iraq, which is simply stand on the sidelines, do some cheerleading, admonish a little bit, and then get out of the way? Would they take any greater role in this issue because it involves nuclear weapons than it did in Iraq? That requires a crystal ball, Grant.
Please. It does. It's a good question, too, particularly because the United Nations Command still exists, which is that what wasn't prosecuted and was involved in the first Korean War.
Right.
So that still exists. So there is actually not just on the books, but there's a skeleton sort of structure organization that allows, in the event of a conflict, for supporting UN forces to actually flow through Japan and into Korea. So, for example, you've got, I think it's 8 air bases and naval bases in Japan, which by treaty the UN is allowed to use those to move forces. So that is a complicating factor because that doesn't, in some respects, because that doesn't exist anywhere else, where the UN is kind of on record as saying it's willing to get involved to some extent in something, in a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. But if that did not exist, then I think we could probably expect something kind of Iraq-like, where there would be an effort, I think, by most countries to sort of stand by or stand back from anything that goes on, and the UN wouldn't play a huge role. But also, a lot depends on what Mr. Kim does. If the North Koreans are seen as starting something that nobody can ignore, that even somebody who'd like to ignore can't ignore it, then I think the UN just might get involved to a greater degree. And, who knows, maybe even there might be some real sanctions. But
really?
You do have the vetoes of Russia and China in particular, right, that would put a limit on what the UN could do.
I don't think that they will ever do anything. That's my sense, is that this is a perfunctory way, and the most important thing that's happening, the most important thing that is happening is that the nations of the world are lining up on one side. That's what, to me, is the most important thing, in that whatever sanctions come out, North Korea certainly won't respect, and their effect will be marginal at best. And so it gets at least the nations of the world on one side pushing, and then when these fail and he continues, then we'll ratchet it up and ratchet it up until a point where it either forces diplomatic conversation or something else happens. And I just don't see the UN. I see it as a largely useless organization because of what it has failed to prevent and what it has failed to address in the 20th century. I think it's an embarrassment. And I think it's a luxury toy for nations. Yeah, let's get appointed to the UN and go to New York City and live on somebody else's dime, and it's a great life. What did they actually, what did they actually do? What did they actually prevent? Which is what it was designed for when it was conceived. So I'm certainly not a fan, And I don't think they do good things. And I think they're just this toothless event in New York City, more for social work than for actual you know, movement of issues on the planet. I think it's pathetic. I think it's pathetic. So anyway, just in case you wanted to know what I felt about the UN.
Well, I think if one had to argue the point, I'd rather argue your position than the other side. I'm afraid that's where the bulk of the evidence leads one. But it does, yeah, and so, yeah, I don't really put too much hope in what the UN might do, although it can provide just a little marginal assistance if it gets its act together. In just, if nothing else, saying that if any country wants to help the Americans, we won't object. But at the end of the day, even if they do object, I don't think that's going to matter. Ultimately, it is an organization, I think, whose usefulness is certainly a debatable point.
All right, another email. Mac, I have a little bit different interpretation, and I'd be curious to know if Grant thinks I'm whistling past the graveyard here. I think because of things I heard Mike Pompeo say in an interview recently, I do believe China's leaning on them, and I do think that they restrain themselves in their Founders Day celebration. Now, we will find out shortly if I'm right or wrong, and I know Grant is a smart guy, but I think what I saw from the Pompeo interview encouraged me a little bit. Did Grant see the interview? If so, what did he think?
I only read about it. And the email is not ill-found. It's in the ballpark, and it's in the ballpark. But whenever I'm looking at the track record of China's behavior over, well, goodness, going back 25 years at least that I can remember, I've never seen any room for grounds for optimism in terms of what China's going to do to rein in North Korea. So that's a quarter century. I've just not seen the evidence. I know that Mike Pompeo is the head of the CIA. That organization has not exactly covered itself in glory when it comes to anticipating certainly the main threats to the United States, and nor has it covered itself in glory apparently when it comes to being able to tell us what is going on in these kinds of countries. It's much easier to recruit half the population of Ecuador than it is to actually make the trouble of finding out and being able to obtain information from and about North Korea. But actually, it's not that hard, but they just always don't have a good track record at it. So, but then again, he's a responsible guy, and I'm sure he's not making this up. In fact, I would be astonished if he was, but I'm not so sure that he's really right on this. Okay. If he is, I'd be glad to be surprised.
Well, he's linking to heretofore unlinked premises and then drawing a conclusion. I believe they call that inductive logic, yes?
Yes. How about that, Grant?
Taking you back to logic class.
I read an article about logic, so that's all I know about anything. I read something about it.
I took it as a class. I thought it was going to be interesting, intellectual. It was mathematics.
Oh goodness, I'm glad.
I know.
With a guy like Pompeo in that position, he's an outsider, and they have a way of being too impressed with what they hear, what they see at that position in that organization. Then one quote which I heard, this was some years ago, from a guy from that organization. He was telling me about how they deal with the Senate intelligence staff, the House Intelligence Committee, and he was dismissive of the ability of those organizations to really rein them in. And he used the expression, I remember very well, he said, about going up to Capitol Hill, he said, tell them a few stories, and give them some show and tell, and they think they're dealing with Mr. Bond himself. And I'm not sure that Pompeo is the guy who understands how the racket works or doesn't work that really would give me the confidence that that organization has managed to correct its deficiencies. It'd be just my take on it. But once again, I'd be very interested to know why, you know, what his statements were based. But I can't, but nobody else that I know, nothing that I've seen, is at all optimistic about what China is going to do. I would suggest, you know, that these recent sanctions at the UN actually give some insights, when you look at what compromises the United States had to make. For example, the Americans wanted a complete cut of oil. Instead, it was capped at a very pretty high rate. The Americans wanted to freeze Kim Jong-un's assets and a few other people's, and the Chinese did not allow that to happen. The Americans wanted the Korean airline to be banned from flying anywhere. Chinese didn't let that happen. The Americans wanted to make it much easier to stop North Korean ships on the high seas. The Chinese didn't let that happen. The Americans wanted to really cut North Korea from the international financial system. The Chinese didn't let that happen. The Americans wanted to put an end to overseas Chinese North Korean slave labor or indenture that forced labor they send overseas. That wasn't done. Instead, it was just agreed that there would be no new visas issued for these people. So I'd say I'm not, if China's leaning on North Korea, I'd like to see how they're doing it. But where I think it is probably correct, and this is just my perspective, is that, that Xi is irked with North Korea, and I think he's not happy with some of the things that Kim is doing, but I don't know that they're pressuring North Korea in a way that is going to have any effect. I think we'll know soon enough if there's another nuclear test or an aggressive missile test. Then I would like to know what Mr. Pompeo would say about that. But it's a good question, and yeah, I could of course be wrong. But I think time will tell what you know exactly whether or not there was any optimism or that the optimism was warranted.
All right, let me ask you the general question. Over the course of the last 2 weeks, I mean, obviously, are there any other thoughts that you have about where the United Nations is? And then I've got one more. I've got a U.S. Navy question for you. In light of our last conversation, is there any other things, any other footnotes about where we are with North Korea? For instance, there's, you know, a story ran in the American media yesterday about Marines, you know, now training in Korea. Well, the truth is, we train there every, you know, we're there just about all the time. Units from the firing restrictions so restrictive on Okinawa that anybody that's part of the unit deployment program normally goes to Korea to do any kind of substantial training because the range regs in Korea are more like. More like those, you know, at least here in the United States on the good ranges out in 29 Palms. So is there anything that I haven't asked you in terms of the events of the last week that you think people ought to at least have on their radar?
You know, not that I can think of. You know, I'm trying to think through the region if there's anything else. I would note there's been a little attention paid, and it's really to the Russian willingness to undercut sanctions against North Korea.
Right.
And that gets very little attention. And, you know, when I talk about this, I almost never mention the Russians, except maybe as an afterthought. But it's important to consider that Russia does have a spoilers role to play up there to anything we might try to do. And even if the Chinese come on board, then the Russians can make up some of the difference. But I don't... say that's just something it gets probably say for every 20 articles or reports that come out about China and North Korea, you might get one about Russia. So I just throw that out. But otherwise, I think we're really We've sort of reached a point where we've seen what the UN's going to do. Now we have to wait to see what the United States is going to do, though they're going to have to give it some time for these sanctions to fail. But also, of course, what North Korea does, that will, once they do something, that's going to restart all the fussing. So that's, I think, about, I can't think of anything else important or that's significant. I usually will once I hang up, but I can't.
I do that all the time. That was a question I wanted to ask. I'll read you an email question. Mac, Grant was on last week, I believe, talking about the United States Navy. You were making comments yesterday about Operation Tempo and how fast it is these days. The fact that we don't say no to requests for cooperation in exercises or anything else, and we do that with a dwindling number of ships. All that should not be confused, though, with the day-to-day discipline that an infantry battalion or a ship at sea would execute its task with. I'd be curious to hear Grant comment on that.
I think so. I'm not a Navy guy.
Right.
I don't want to get too far ahead, but I think anyone who's been in the military just instinctively knows that something really wrong or lax was going on those ships. You know, were not enough people on the bridges, there were not enough of the right people, there weren't enough properly trained people there, that you know, they were doing such basic maneuvers that it's almost unthinkable to have these incidents happen. And ultimately, that's bad leadership. It's not leprechauns who are to blame for it. There's somebody whose job it is, whose responsibility it is to make sure that when the bridge is properly manned by people who know what they're doing, in the way we would expect the flight deck on an aircraft to have properly trained pilots on it. And it really is just an astonishing thing. Combined with the busyness, Ray Mabus's and really President Obama's disastrous social engineering or social experimentation that has been inflicted on the Navy and on the U.S. Armed Forces. In addition to that, one of the things that's come out and that I think really explains a lot is that, you know, I had always thought that, you know, that a surface warfare officer in the Navy, he goes to a long school, a very difficult school, and at the end of that, you know, he knows how to basically handle a ship. But apparently around 2003, the Navy stopped, or they closed that long, difficult SWO, Surface Warfare Officer School.
Yeah, 16 weeks back in what? In Connecticut, yes?
Up that a ways. And they closed it, and instead the new officers watch a series of computer disks. I would guess, I'll bet that this was the time of the dot-com boom. And I will bet there was an admiral who was out to show that he was a really with it, kind of out-of-the-box thinking guy, and explained how they were going to save a lot of money and they were going to incorporate synergies by using computer module-based training.
I hate that word. Inefficiencies.
Oh yeah, but you're not. You obviously don't get it. You know, you're not a rubric kind of guy. But this was the dot-com era, and if you can think back to that, everything was dot-com this, dot-com that. So here you have an admiral or two, who showed he was going to be the guy, the tech-savvy guy, and as a result, they closed this and they claimed they were going to save a lot of money. The amount saved was about the cost of maybe a few admirals' manservants, apparently, but ultimately, what you get. And this is just astonishing, you get new officers who show up at a ship, and the ship skipper is supposed to train them up to some standard, and the standards themselves are vague. Now, this is what you would have, say the Marine equivalent would be an officer graduates from basically OCS.
Right.
And shows up at an artillery unit without having gone to Fort Sill, much less TBS. one can, you know, any moderately alert moron could see the problems with this. And it ultimately, it comes down to the people not being trained when they get to the ships and or to any reasonable level. And that is something that the last five or six CNOs should be called back to active duty and cashiered. You know, I don't want to be mean, but this is just when I learned this, it's just an astonishing thing to hear and really very depressing because of the, you know, I've always liked the Navy and impressed with it.
Right.
But this is about as big a leadership failure as you could possibly get. But when I heard this, I just couldn't believe it. That article I'd written, I didn't know this. I had a whiff of it, but it was a couple days later that I found it out, and I'd have included it.
Right. No, it is astounding. I think the different fleets have stood up a course, an 8-week course, which means it's 6 weeks by the time you process in and process out, for that's called Basic Division Officers Course. But again, if anybody looks at, you know, all the different things you're exposed to in a formal school, the guest speakers you have, the field trips you take, what you see, how it's molded. People who sell that short, we're obviously the Navy's learning the hard way because, but I was refreshed, Grant, and you can comment on this and I'll let you go. I was refreshed though that the Vice Chief of Naval Operations last week testifying in Washington DC said when given all these different ways to cop out of it, right? He said, there's no excuse for it. None. No matter how fast our operational tempo is, no matter how much personnel turbulence there is no excuse for this. And I thought that is the makings of correcting the problem. When you look and even when they say you don't need to take the complete face shot, you could turn your head and take a glancing face shot. And I was very encouraged by the fact that he said, no. We need the face shot. It's part of correcting our course. I was encouraged by that.
Did he offer to resign on the spot and at a lower grade? And I'm not.
Said I was encouraged, not ecstatic. But it's, I will tell you what. I've quoted you in terms of the whole Ray Mabus thing and the whole a series of CNOs ought to be called back and taken to task for this because this did not happen overnight.
Yeah, what I would like to see them do is when this the SWO school was cut, that apparently there were officers who complained about this, and they were all savaged, you know, as the guys who just don't get it, you know, the troglodytes. I would find these people, and some of them have written some very good pieces that have exposed all this, but I'd find them, bring them back, promote them a few grades, and have them fix it. Instead of the current crowd, but when a guy who's been, you know, who is by definition to blame for what's happened says he takes responsibility, you know, unless he like offers to move to South Philly or something as penance, I'm not entirely moved, but I know what you mean. It is they have a chance now to fix it. And, you know, hopefully they will. And it'd be nice if it, you know, once you get sort of these Arleigh Burke and Halsey and Nimitz and Spruance kind of guys in the Navy again. They're there, but sometimes they just need the opportunity to sort of run free. So maybe it could turn a corner here.
It's interesting email. Mac, I was talking to my father-in-law, who's a retired surface warfare guy in the Navy. He told me that so many CNOs have been aviators that the Black Shoe Navy has been somewhat marginalized. And his comment was, I hope we get a Black Shoe CNO, and then we can do a little bit of course correction. The Navy has tilted in the direction of naval aviation for far too long. Interesting comment.
That's just, and once again, I only have very limited exposure and at best anecdotal evidence, but I would tend to agree with that. The, you know, when I was involved in amphibious stuff, particularly with the Japanese, but the U.S. Navy was very helpful with us, so I got some exposure to that, and I was always impressed with the amphib guys that I, officers that I dealt with. And but I always remembered that, you know, these are in the Navy, these aren't the cool guys. You know, if you're an amship, you know, they don't make, Top Gun was not made about the skipper of an LPD. And, you know, say they're not the cool guys. Right. The, but at the same, but they are the, they're as important as anything else the Navy has going. And I would hope that they look to fix this problem. If it's a problem with, in the surface warfare community, then get, give that community the resources and the support and the, really the respect, that it deserves. And it, it is kind of a surprise that, there haven't been more surface warfare officers as, CNOs. You know, you, it is of course possible that one could be, less than competent as a SWO, or just as much as you could find a less than competent aviator. But really just the right guys who are willing to admit there's a problem, and ideally who would not normally be categorized as a yes man, who does very well in the, inside the beltway. That would be a, probably the right kind of guy to hire to fix things, which should be my, my take on it. But once again, the Redskins, I thought they had the Super Bowl in the bag, and I discovered maybe not yet.
We're mindful of your constant caveat. Final email question. You're a popular man, as usual. Mac, I'm curious about Grant's thoughts on the president.
I like him. Well, I voted for him, and I haven't voted for a winning president for a couple, but I've always thought that once someone gets that position, that it's incumbent on all of us to do what we can to make it succeed, make him succeed, make the country succeed, or allow them to succeed. And I have discovered, of course, I have no idea what Americans think, so I'm probably a minority here, but I think that he's, you know, look at what he's done. You know, don't, you know, nitpick, you know, the, his, you know, his tweets or whatever, but say, look at what we've done. And I think we've at least got a chance, you know, and he's got some very good people around him. I wish he had more of them, but, you know, I think that General, Mattis at Defense and Tillerson and, having a, now having an adult as a chief of staff is a huge improvement.
Right.
But I think we're actually, you know, I say if there's some grounds for initial optimism. I think towards Europe, for example, towards the Russians, we're actually taking a more, I don't know, call it an aggressive line, but we're actually, we're not curling up the way we used to be. In Asia as well, you know, you're finally starting to get some recognition that China is a problem, and you're starting to see some initial steps in that direction. There's North Korea as well. There's we don't have this. We're not chasing the idea of negotiations. Southeast Asia, we're finally starting to pay a little more attention to that. So if we can, if he can get his, I don't know, get an equilibrium, and if the media will lay off him a bit, and these people who desperately want him to fail, both Democrats and Republicans, if they'll grow up, then I think the country has a chance to move along. But like, as with Mr. Trump, as with any president, they have their things people like, the things that, that we don't like. But I think on balance that, the world certainly hasn't ended. And I think we've, we've got a chance, and now it's up to us, collectively, if we'll take advantage of it. But I will say that the hearing, like a guy with a Queens accent, a president, that you've got to, I don't think that's ever been heard before. So it's, I think that's kind of a refreshing change sometimes to this, I don't know, but the gobbledygook that you hear from presidents in this diplomatic, presidential sounding voices. But I think he's got a, you know, he has a chance, and we'll see how he does.
You know, I agree with you, and I think what he did last week, I think a lot of the people in this nation noticed that he would not be content with the nonsense of the Democratic and the Republican parties, and that if the Republicans wouldn't help him do what he wanted, then he would deal with the Democrats. And I think it to use a baseball euphemism, he threw up and in on the Republican Party last week. And yeah. And then if you watch, I don't know if you watch Steve Bannon's interview, but Steve Bannon talks about why they set their agenda the way they did, why we did healthcare first. He said, they told us, we've been working on this thing for 7 years. We'll get this to you by Easter. Then we'll do taxes over the summer. We'll come back and do infrastructure. Everything that you campaigned on will be done in the first year. He said, that's why we set it up that way. He said they didn't know what they were talking about. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
All right, Grant Newsham. Grant, first of all, thank you very much. And where do your travels take you in the next week? Will you be in Hawaii globetrotting?
I'll stick around here for a while, I think.
Good. All right. All right. Well, you have a nice day. Thank you very much for the visit.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
There you have it. The one and only Grant Newsham here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Grant's an interesting guy, always, and a great guest, and very, very gracious. He's always gracious with his time here with us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're gonna put Steve Bannon. We're gonna continue the trials of Steve Bannon.
That's right.
I didn't realize how popular that would be. It is. So don't touch that dial. Don't go anywhere. More of All Marine Radio on a Wednesday coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. Battlemug.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Thanks to Grant Nation for coming on. So here's where we sit. All right. Let me do my in stride analysis of where we sit with North Korea. All right, think of these things as all marginal contributions. As we move to, we're moving towards what? That's the question, right? What are we moving to? Well, it's either going to be a diplomatic solution. Which would include negotiation. Or it's going to include war. Or it's going to be involved a shooting war. 38 special. We're done with them. So that's the path we're headed down. So what is the United Nations role in all of that? Well, the UN, as a democratic nation and member of the UN, the United Nations is a necessary gateway to the diplomacy that's going to need to be involved, hopefully, or the combat that's going to be involved. In any case, as a free nation, as a UN member, it has to go through the UN. And the UN has to flail its arms, take whatever inept actions that it will take, and then be discarded. That's the way we do it. And so it goes. So where are we now? Where we are now is, what, a month ago, maybe six weeks? You had the South Korea president saying, yeah, and it might be longer, it might be 2 or 3 months ago, but he said, yeah, the deployment of those THAAD batteries, yeah, we don't want that many. Well, that's changed. The discussion has now migrated to the reintroduction of tactical nuclear weapons to the Korean Peninsula by the United States and giving them to the Koreans. Okay, the Koreans are shooting their own cruise missile and testing that from aviation platforms. They've done that this week. The Japanese are saying that the denuclearization of the peninsula is required before discussions. And the Japanese are talking about obtaining some kind of first strike capability, nuclear, as part of their self-defense. So the discussion has changed incredibly. The United Nations has now come down on the against, as a group, and again, not what the United States wants, but part of the political process that we don't actually see in our own nation's capital. You saw at the UN, the United States didn't get what it wanted, got some of what it wanted, and it's a good and it's a necessary step. Maybe not good, but it's a necessary step. And so that's the political process designed for everybody to be unhappy a little bit, but for progress to be made. So in terms of the in-stride analysis of where we're at, okay, we're at the first weak sanctions of the United Nations and the stiffening of the resolve of the South Koreans and the Japanese. All good things. All good things. The other thing that you've seen, and again, I find it real interesting. I find it real interesting that Banyan has left. It seems like the drama around the White House has decreased. You see the president doing things that are presidential, and the whole dust up about his comments after the Charlottesville or as the Charlottesville thing happened. Is something that I won't say it's a thing of the past, but it's certainly not the thing that the nation's obsessed with. So I think the president, you're starting to see General Kelly, and I think Bannon said yesterday, you know, General Kelly's not going to change him. Chief of Staff Kelly, not a general anymore, has said, I can't change him. But what I can do is I can support him better, and we can focus on different things, and we can take the drama out of this thing. So I would tell you this: if you grade the chief of staff, okay, on drama and on focus, what you've seen is the president. It seems like being more presidential, not that he can't get out of his lane at a moment's notice, because he can't. Okay, you've seen, I would say, is that arrow up, down, or sideways? I would say the drama arrow is down, is pointed down. Okay, we have less drama. The focus, the only focus that we've seen the president have is on political issues and not on the drama of Donald Trump. So I would say the focus he gets, that arrows up. All of that bodes well. In terms of leaking and things like that, not so much anymore, which is interesting. So it allows him to be more presidential. So, again, Donald Trump, and then what happened last week, I think, is historic, because what you see him getting away from is this gridlock that has consumed the nation. It's consumed the nation. And so maybe he will govern as an independent president, willing to do work with both sides. And in order to build coalitions that pass things that he believes are in the best interest of the American people, that would be interesting. And I'll tell you what, the other thing that I love Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan being called out. I love that stuff. And for whatever reason, Paul Ryan is giving interviews today and said this. Speaker Ryan says in an AP interview that deporting people brought to the U.S. illegally as children is not in America's interest. Hello. Deporting 11 million people is not in America's interest. Okay, so let's get the adults in the room. Let's figure it out. Provide for some legal status, sort of citizenship, so that they can stay in the country that they've worked in and are law-abiding citizens. The non-law-abiders, get them out of here. They're children. They should have a path to citizenship. Okay? I think that's what the American people want. But it has to come with securing the southern border so we don't, in 5 years, we don't have another 11 million people that we have to deal with. Yeah, we're done with that phase of our immigration policy on our southern border. So, anywho. Interesting stuff. All right, let me, 9 o'clock. Let me see if the Gunner's going to join us. I'm not exactly sure. It is Wednesday. Some days he doesn't. Some days he does. So I will go ahead and find out if the Gunner and, but in either way, you'll hear Steve Bannon coming up next. So without further ado, 9 o'clock, we'll take a quick break. Mike Musselman, maybe join us next. The trial of Steve Bannon might include the Gunner. It may not. I'll find out momentarily. Don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.